The Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefery.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefery's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefery.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 59. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring you experts in the field to talk shop. If you've not already done so, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube or join the mailing list at ronmckeefery.com so that you can stay up to date with the latest episodes and anything else that we have going on. This week, real excited to have Bert Soren of Sorenex Exercise Equipment on the show with us. Bert's a good buddy. We've known him through the years. Obviously, we all know the impact that Sorenex has had on the field in terms of the exercise equipment, but also in putting out great events like the Sorenex Summer Strong event and just constantly putting out great information for us to all take away. In the show, we talk a little bit about the Sorenex Summer Strong event, which I'd highly encourage you to go to. A fantastic event, really neat things that they're putting on down there. We talk a little bit about track and field program design, which is something that doesn't get talked about nearly enough. But, you know, Bert was a four-time All-American in college and a great athlete, competitive professional Highland Games athlete as well. And so getting his perspective from an athlete's point of view is fantastic. And then we talk about where the field is headed. And what's great about Bert is he gets a chance to get around and see all the different programs and see what works in different places and really has a unique perspective on where the field is going and shares that with us. So I know you're going to love this episode. Before we do, we want to recognize our sponsors, EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com. If you have not checked out IgnitionAPG.com or on their Facebook page, make sure to do so. It's just a company that I believe in. They're doing things the right way. Really training athletes for the mind, the body, and the soul. And I'm really impressed with their mission and what they're trying to do. So they put out lots of different things that we've been interested in. They have a couple products that they put out. They have a supplement company. Their parent company is a pharmaceutical company, so they put out pharmaceutical grade supplementation, which is fantastic. Obviously, they're a sports performance company, and they train several athletes and do some really cool things. And then they have a speed certification that I did last year that I really highly recommend. I would encourage you to either look into their on-site certifications or one of their different events that they put on through the year, throughout the year, where they host speed certifications in different cities. So check out IgnitionAPG.com. Know you're really going to value what they do as much as I do. Lastly, if you've not checked out Strength Coach Basic Training, you're a young strength coach just getting in the field, Strength Coach Basic Training is a product that I created several years ago that it's our internship program online. And we've had quite a bit of success helping place interns throughout the country. And, the educational plan that we put together, I think, is fantastic for developing. We put a lot of time into it. Strength Coach Basic Training is basically 8 lectures that I give our interns each and every time. And we combine that with, obviously, the daily interaction. And I've created this private Facebook group, and that's where we host everything now. You can really multiply the number of coaches that you know instantly by joining Strength Coach Basic Training and being able to interact with other coaches that are in a similar spot to you in your development. And I tell you, it's led to lots of different relationships being formed and guys going on and helping each other out. So I would encourage you to check out Strength Coach Basic Training and see what we got going on there. All right, sit back, enjoy this episode. You're going to get a ton out of Bert speaking, and I'll see you on the other side.
All right, guys, real excited. Wanted to take a little bit different twist today and brought a friend of mine on. I've known Bert for a long time. Bert Soren is the co-owner of Soren Exercise Equipment. We all know what a great product they make. But what's most, you know, what I like the most about Bert and his family is that how ahead of the game, that they are, and that they're practitioners first, and then they turn around and they practically apply that and go into their dungeon, their lab, and come up with some crazy stuff. And so, man, I appreciate you coming on, brother.
Man, Ron, it's an absolute, the honor is all mine, man. This is a pleasure.
Thanks, man. Hey, you got a great story, man, and you and I have talked about it in conferences and stuff. Tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of how you got into both strength and conditioning, because you have a passion for this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, take that into the industry part of it as well.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of safe to say, I guess, I was born into it. Dad started the company in 1980. I was born in 76, so I've been around it my whole life. But really, Dad was innovating and making strength training equipment since 1965 when he was a teenager. Grew up in the York Barbell Gym and training with all those guys up there. So for my whole life, there's always been that honoring the strong and search for strength. So that's always kind of been a thread along my whole life, thanks to Dad. And so I was kind of laughing that it's always been kind of a rite of passage in the Soren family to deadlift double body weight. And I remember it in second or third grade, I wrote the happiest day of my life was the day I deadlifted double body weight. And which the funny part was, double body weight at that time was 112 pounds. So it's kind of fun now. I actually have to train up to stay with that. So it's always been there. And that's been the basis of it. And I was thinking before when we were looking over some of the ideas that there's really about 90% of my thoughts go into pretty much four things. It's my family, lifting, throwing, human performance, and my outdoor pursuits, hunting and fishing and stuff like that. I've tried to change that. It doesn't work. Yeah. That's what I love. And so I've tried to excel in those pieces just because of the love. And I believe that if you chase money, if you chase fame, you chase all the other stuff, you'll be chasing your tail. But if you chase excellence in what you love, that other stuff will come, and that's great. You'll be able to pay the bills. But it all comes down to just doing what you love. And I feel very fortunate that I get a paycheck every once in a while for doing what I love.
Well, you're a great athlete at South Carolina, and you have a great athletic background. Talk a little bit. Let's get into a little bit of programming before we get into some of the other stuff. You know,
sure.
Specifically the throwing athlete. What were some of the things as an athlete that you really enjoyed and felt like this directly translates? And what were some of the things like coaches were doing with you? You're like, nah, you know, especially now that you're got your hand in both as a coach as well.
Gotcha. I think I was very, very fortunate and blessed that I ended up being a thrower. And I threw a little bit in high school because my father was a thrower. And really, I walked on at South Carolina, 170-pound walk-on that had no business being on a Division I team. Thankfully, I didn't know how good South Carolina was at the time, or I probably would have tried. So through a lot of hard work and the coaches giving me some extra attention and being hard on me at times, I was able to excel and do pretty well. But that's where I really fell in love with the weight room. I'd always been around it, but that's when I really fell in love and realized that you could literally change your life through weight training and having a great coach that believes in you. And that was the biggest, that was when the identity for me was built as an athlete. Before that, I was a guy that enjoyed training and I liked fishing and hunting probably too much. But once I had success in that, it was Katie bar the door. I was able to identify myself as an athlete that wanted to succeed, and it was a drug. The more I got it, more success I got, the more that I wanted. And I guess I was just too naive to realize what levels were capable of an athlete of my size. And I was thankfully put on a team that was filled with all Americans, and I just thought that's what I was supposed to do. And so I have to give thanks to Coach Judge. Larry Judge was my coach back in the day. And he taught me how to train really, really hard. And that's where I think a lot of the throwers or even athletes in general, they have to learn the grind. You just have to learn that you have to get brutally strong on the fundamentals and put in a few years, not like a couple of neat training cycles and some fancy stuff. I mean, when we trained 50 weeks a year, we had a week off after indoor nationals if we made it, and a week off after outdoor nationals if we made it. Otherwise, you're on. And if you made your gains in the summer, and you made your gains at Christmas break when everyone else was relaxing. And so our goal was, I wanted to come back from Christmas stronger and in better shape than I was when I left. And that's how I was able to pack, you know, 30% extra training volume between the summer and the Christmas break. We were able to do that. And if you look at a 4-year period in college, I added a year of training time to my life.
Right.
I was able to pack it in and always come in harder. But it's a great sacrifice, right?
Right.
It was, you know, I remember throwing on New Year's Eve and training and hitting PR New Year's Eve in the weight room. And you know, of course, you try to get done and clean up and go out after that, and you look like a weirdo training. But that's what it takes, especially if you're not just a gifted giant.
Right.
So my thoughts would be, you know, hit the fundamentals and learn to grind. 50 weeks a year, we hit bench twice, squat twice, clean twice, snatch twice, jerk once, incline once, and that was every week we hit that. So we had 8 Olympic lifts. I mean, it was crazy.
Mm.
And also the clean pulls and snatch pulls added on top of that. But out of that, I think out of our throwing group, I wouldn't even want to imagine how many All-American honors we got out of that. And I remember one day we actually had 4 women squat 405 for 5.
Wow.
Those team. And the men were obviously much stronger. And I didn't realize, I thought that's just how strong teams were. But when you have a coach that just knows how to grind and knows how to just lay it on you, you end up showing up at meets and you're set. You're in a good position. So that was what I'd say about from a collegiate thrower standpoint. Now, from a professional or as you get older, that system doesn't work as
well. That's right.
Learn that the hard way. And that's where systems like the ARC, the autoregulation conjugate, and some different percentage systems and recovery methods and changing your volume has to happen. Had I done that at 18, I would have undertrained and never got anywhere. But I had trained to that point where literally, you know what it's like. You can't walk upstairs. You're riding your bike home from practice and you just fall off because your legs are up. And, you know, all that stuff. But you got to go through that. And thankfully, God gives us the strength at 18 through 22 to get through that. So.
Well, you know, that's the question, you know, is obviously that you're able to pack a lot of things in, and but we all know that more is not always better. You know, it's better in that we were able to get more volume in and more training time. But what were some of the things that you've learned now at being on the kind of the coaching side of things and being, you know, in the inventing side of things that you wish you would have gone back and you would have done a little bit differently?
Right, right. Well, definitely the recovery methods. You know, I went through college and into my start of my professional career in the early 2000s, and the recovery methods just frankly weren't there to that extent. The soft tissue work wasn't as obvious. You know, the recovery shakes were there, the creatines, the HMBs were, but they were still kind of not really understood. And it was lift, get really, really, really strong, and go home and watch The Simpsons and try for the best. You know? So now, like, being able to tweak percentages better for you know, for how adapted is my central nervous system at the time. Things we're doing with the Tendo now and the autoregulation conjugate system that Chris West actually came up with, and I tweaked it. And, you know, fast forward to my last year, I believe, as an amateur and professional in Highland Games, I was able to hit a personal record at like 17 games in a row and never got hurt that year. It was the first year in 12 years that I wasn't hurt as a thrower. And I was 30 years old at the time, which is kind of interesting. I had some PRs in lifting as well as throwing, set a number of field records, but it was when I really changed my training from the old style of my training to going completely off of where my central nervous system was. And that's what really got my wheels turning about recovery. That's when I implemented contrast baths and contrast showers, post-workout, a lot of soft tissue work, massage, trying to do some skeletal balance pieces in there. And I didn't really know a lot about it, but I knew it made me feel better, and I knew the implements kept going further. So I would just try to find those mentors that knew about it, and sometimes it was in some unlikely places.
Yeah. So you go through college, you throw on, you get a professional career, and then a lot of times as children we run away from what our family's passion is. But
right.
I know how important family is to you. But was it a clear I'm going into this business, or was there some hesitation there?
Well, I was in college. I was going to be a teacher. I was training to be a coach and a teacher, and I just started getting more and more interesting in human performance. And I think that's what happens when you're an athlete who specifically wasn't good at one point and learns to get better and better. You start unlocking the secrets to it.
Yep.
Secrets to strength. And then you just want to open more and more secrets and open more and more doors. So with that being the case, it becomes a life quest, and you become a real student of the event. And I have to kind of, all the folks that are my age, I kind of have to brag a little bit. Man, we didn't have YouTube. We didn't have Facebook.
That's right.
All that stuff. You had a tank of gas and a crappy car. You had a phone that plugged into the wall. Hopefully you ran into some dudes that were better than you, and I hate to say it, but I've spent a lot of beer money trying to get guys drunk enough to tell me what they do and how they beat them. That works. But now you could YouTube, and you can see all the best guys,
and
so it's a lot easier to find the information. Thankfully, it was just a painstaking process before.
Right. No, I agree. So with the business side of things now, what are some of the trends that you're seeing in strength and conditioning right now that obviously you guys are always on the forefront of, but that you're seeing out there that strength coaches are adapting to?
Right. Well, I think your most obvious trend right now in strength and conditioning is a hybrid approach to training, and that's obviously been brought on by CrossFit, because the strength coaches you're getting coming out into the world now are 22 to 24 years old. So they were teenagers when CrossFit was coming around, and so they're just exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I definitely think there's something to a hybrid approach of training, and depending on what your specific goals are. And so I think you're seeing athletes that are more fit, not just strong. In the 90s, you had a lot of powerlifting, and guys were just really, really strong. But now folks are starting to learn how to move. Now, that's the obvious answer. I think most important answer of the trend would be recovery. That's it. I mean, and not just the typical things that you see of using a stick or a lacrosse ball or whatever it may be, but going really that next step. And we're launching a kind of a whole idea of lift, move, recover as an athlete. Those are really the three things you need to be able to do, and to treat them with equal importance.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, training itself from the resistance standpoint, I wouldn't say it is spent. There's obviously still things that are going to come out, but everyone knows how to squat, clean, snatch, push, jerk, all that. If you don't now, you're probably so far behind the bubble that you don't even know it.
Right.
But people know that. No, most people know how to program lifting and lift properly. That's okay. But the next step is how do you build in recovery? And one of my mentors, Jeff Nichols, who is actually a SEAL Team 6 member, was in charge of all of their recovery methods. And you talk about a group that's working with enormous cortisol, high stress, poor nutrition, poor sleep, terrible situations physically that they're in, but obviously
right.
mentally. So I'm trying to look at who's the most extreme that has the highest stakes of their sport, as well as has the most stressors.
Right.
So how do those guys recover from that situation? A lot of it comes back to the brain and the central nervous system, and how do you go to parasympathetic? And so he's teaching me through Apex Human Performance. They're in Virginia Beach. He's working a lot with Mark Stevenson, and they're learning ways and implementing ways to download the body where the body can recover and learn. So that's the stuff I'm really interested in now. That's where I think the industry is going to go, because, and again, those are the pieces that you could get some high compliance from the athletes.
Right.
It's hard to change a power lifter into an Olympic lifter or vice versa. But if you show someone something that feels pretty good and
they all want to feel good, yeah.
Yeah, they're in. They're in. Recovery shake, yeah, good. Hit me up. So I think that's what's really going to change the industry personally. On a side note from a trend, and then this may be maybe just more of a realization. I believe you and I have talked about it before. I think there's an interesting, as I get older, maybe it just manifests itself more. I call it the life cycle or the lifespan of a strength and conditioning coach and athlete or a strength athlete.
Okay.
And it's been fun because in my job, I have a neat opportunity as being a common denominator between a lot of programs. A lot of guys will tell me stuff that they won't tell their competitors, and it makes sense.
Right.
But I get to hear a lot of it, so it's really cool. And what I'm finding is by watching, there tends to be the lifespan. I'll give an example. I think the 16, and this is kind of what I've been playing with, the 16 through 22-year-olds is what I call the horse phase. You're gifted. You're basically a horse. You're the coach is telling you what to do. You're a body. You're a warm body. You're killing it.
Right.
You're learning about strength conditioning, and you're basically you're your own lab rat at that. Okay. And so
I call that guy the technician.
There you go.
The guy that learns how to be a great technician.
Yep. There you go. And at 22, you kind of decide, all right, I'm done with college, or maybe I'm not going to go to pro, but I kind of like this strength game, and I'm going to either go to the next level in my sport or go to the next level in coaching. So that 22 through 26, I hate to say it, and hopefully I don't offend anyone. It's just a part of it. And the only reason I could say it is because I've lived in this phase myself. It's the know-it-all phase.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually you've had one coach or you've been on one program, and it worked because you're
you've
young.
You've seen success.
You've seen success, and so everyone else is stupid. And it's absolutely hilarious. And it's these guys are dumb because they box squat. These guys are dumb because they full clean.
Right.
And you hear these I hate to say it, but they're somewhat immature arguments about who's the best guy.
Right.
And everyone else is stupid.
Right.
And
right.
And but then you kind of grow out of that. And about 27 through 32, I call it the second coming. And that's when you meet someone or you get your job changes and you're under a different mentor. And you go, hey, wait a minute. That wasn't the only way to do that. And everyone isn't stupid. And it kind of causes this opportunity and this drive to exploration. And you want to find out. Maybe West Side isn't the only method. Maybe Olympic lifting or maybe CrossFit, whatever it may be. You kind of put your pride on the shelf and you start exploring. And that hopefully takes a while. But what I found, 33 through about 45, that's when the strength coaches really, they really have seen a lot of it, they've explored, and they've kind of figured out their own system. And then that's the system they believe in, and hopefully there's still the exploration in there that they could still keep their mind open, but that's kind of when they've hit their stride.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty good, they know how to win championships, they know how to have winning teams and keep guys healthy. And they're going to listen, but they know what their deal is. You know, 90% of their stuff is locked, and they spend 90% of their time doing the other 10% trying to figure it out. You know,
right.
The part that troubles me is that 45 and on.
Yeah.
Because I've seen two things happen. One, the thing that I see that frustrates me, just as personal growth, is the guys that get so set in their ways, and they kind of, I almost think they kind of take a paycheck. They just kind of say, hey, I'm here long enough. There's no way I'm going anywhere. I'm just going to do my thing, and I'm going to ride out into the sunset and ride this as long as I can.
Right.
That's frustrating because in any field, you want to be able to stay on top of it. The ones I really appreciate and I gain interest from and gain insight and wisdom are the ones that keep pushing and keep pushing. You look at Dave Williams at Liberty University, man.
Yep.
Good gosh, he was about as forefront as you get, and that guy still is looking and talking and trying to figure stuff out. And so those are the ones I really, really. That's where the choice comes, I think, at that latter stage.
No doubt.
Choice. How are you going to go out on this? And I was talking to Johnny Parker, legend. Talking to him the other day, and we were talking about this specifically. And he told me a great story about the golfer Jack Nicklaus.
Right.
And he said that I might get the numbers wrong, but I believe he won 18 major golf championships. He was second place in 17 or 19, almost the same amount. So he was within one or two strokes almost 40 times of winning.
Wow.
Actually, the best golfer of all time. Well, at 60 years old, he retired from play. You know one of the first things he did?
To work on swing.
Yeah. You know, how amazing is that? You're the best golfer ever, and you take lessons to keep your game sharp.
Wow.
And that, to me, was just the essence of it. Like, how do you stay interested and keep that love and keep the love for learning, not just the love for lifting.
Right.
The love for learning, because there's you gotta admit, there's some smart cats coming out, man.
Oh, no doubt.
Turn some stuff out. You know, and I look at my dad, you know, in a few days, he's gonna attempt a 500-pound deadlift, which will put him at 49 years in a row deadlifting 500 pounds or more.
Wow.
I mean, not only is that strong physically, but just to be interested in something that long, to be interested when, and good God, how bad his body must hurt.
Right.
His mind hurts like crazy after 20 years, much less the Bill Gillespies. And, you know, the guys like my dad and Gillespie and, you know, the just Louis Simmons, good Lord, what he must feel like when he wakes up. So I know that was a long, drawn out what I think the trends are.
Yeah.
But some of the things I'm seeing that excite me in our industry that I really would like to see some more light shed on.
No question. You know, we talked about it on the show a couple of times where, you know, I've spoken at the NSCA clinic where to be a successful strength coach, I think you got to be three things, you know, and that's been in this business for 18 years now, whatever it is. You got to be a great technician. You got to love to lift. You got to learn how to teach, you know, how to demonstrate and teach to bench, squat, clean and everything. But when you become a head strength coach, you have to become a great manager. You know, you have to manage resources and time and people and, you know, energy and all these things, you know. And then the last thing, kind of what you touched upon, is you have to be an entrepreneur. You have to be forward thinking. You have to constantly challenge yourself. And you know, Mark Osanovich, who's one of my mentors, you know, he said that, you know, later in your career, you start to learn how to ask the right questions. You don't have the answers, but you start to learn how to ask the right questions, so you can start to get the answers. And so what you're saying is so true, and so and right on. And a lot of the reason why I do this show is so I can continually talk to great strength coaches, great people, and keep sharpening my sword each and every week.
Absolutely. No, you got it knocked. It's a great plan. It keeps you sharp and keeps you motivated. You have to learn something every week.
No doubt.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, getting into that a little bit, I mean, you mentioned some technology, especially like the parasympathetic and, you know, an HRV and things like that. And Tendo unit you mentioned earlier. Do you think maybe some of this technology, some of the directions we're going with technology is hindering our sports performance?
Well, I go both ways on that a little bit, and there's definitely an argument in both sides. It's like, from a technology perspective, I think safety is at an all-time. It's getting at a higher and higher priority, which is good. Some different safety mechanisms that are coming out. Also, obviously, the technology, as we think of technology, whether it be iPads and Tendos and heart rate variability and sensory deprivation tanks and all that cool stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's helping. It unfortunately makes it a bit more sterile, the training environment, and you have to start weighing in between, are you looking for an amazing result, or are you looking for an amazing experience, a human experience?
Right.
You balance those two. And so I think absolutely for the industry, for athletic performance, the technology is huge. It's accountability. If anything else, at least to hopefully solve some arguments of what doesn't. The other part about that is, though, is the human element of, you still have to have great human and sports psychology, and to be able to deal with people, like you said, as a manager, you need to be able to manage those resources and manage people and have relationships, which it all comes down to human behavior. And
right.
Human behavior drives human performance. And so you can't have one without the other, and I think that's where you can't just be a science guy. You have to be a guy that your teammates and your team looks up to, and they want to hang out with, and they want to please you, and they have to believe 100% that you believe in them.
Right.
And if that's the case, then yeah, that's all of our goals, is human performance. But it all comes down to people. It's process and people, but people really come out first.
No doubt. That's exactly how we use technology. I mean, it's got to integrate seamlessly, for sure.
Yep.
you know, into your training environment. The training environment and is key. That's everything. I mean, we just had a lift this morning. I was talking about the importance of a lifting partner and how that person may end up standing in your wedding at one of these days and how important that relationship is. And, you know, it's a big deal, you know, and you're right. Absolutely. You have to have a great relationship with your strength coach and you can use those things. Like we use heart rate monitors to, especially like with our overweight athletes to, you know, set a standard and to track and to know if they're hitting how many calories they've burned and especially with, you know, calorie deficits for our players. But right. it's gotta be something that's like an add-on versus your program's built around it. And you guys do at Sorenex, you guys do such a great job of seamlessly integrating things into your recs that, you know, you're like, you see it and you're like, oh, damn, I should have thought of that. I mean, that's unbelievable. And I know a lot of it's done because of your own lifting experience and you're like, I mean, it's exactly what it is. It's like, man, we should have something for this, you know, and you make it. Talk a little bit about where that creativity comes from and where the major influences are.
Sure. Well, the major influences are wanting to succeed in the weight room and on the field. That's the influence. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're trying to do is make training solutions. Whether the training solutions are a physical manifestation of steel and wood and rubber and an actual tangible product, if that's the solution that best fits, great, that's it. But if the solution is also different percentages or different timing or implementation of that, then that's what we're going to go to as well. But then I think the key, like you said, is to be able to seamlessly put those two together. And the reason why I think we've been able to do that is because, A, the love that we have for it. B, I've become a student of the sport, of what I was doing. And with my track and field background, Lawrence Seagrave said it best. He said, in track and field, training is the sport. Mm-hmm. So you get good at training because that's the only thing that matters. Right. And so always just trying to find better and better solutions. And we have a training center that is our research and development and showroom. And, you know, I've spent way too many nights after workouts just coming up with different stuff. How does this work? What is this? Can I get this speed or this angle or this resistance on this movement? Why would I do that? Does it make any sense or is it completely stupid? Or, you know, this I'm trying to throw the stone at this angle and wow, if I do this, my foot gets down faster. And it's just always how do you wring those last RPMs out of the engine? And I think that's changed not from only performance side, but like you were saying before, with as a head coach, now you have to work with people and management and time. So with the NC2A, with now them doing time that people train is different than when I came through.
That's right.
So now the time is so much shorter. So that becomes one of our major concerns. How do we create stations that the athletes and the coaches don't – the athletes don't have to move and the coaching doesn't have a managerial nightmare moving people around and a safety nightmare because we're trying to make it very accountable and very easy for the athletes to do things the safest way – but also the most variable way that they possibly can for whatever sport they need. So I think a big benefit that we've had is having a training center. I get to have a job similar to a strength coach. My office literally looks out into the training center. So I get to watch it all day. And I'll be on the phone with a customer and watch. And I'm watching a soccer girl doing single leg Bulgarians. And I'm going, wow, she has to move that bench every time. And I see that she's... Her ankle's flexing the wrong way and she becoming a stability movement instead of an overload movement.
Right.
Fix that.
Right.
And so that's where I've been fortunate enough to have a really cool combo where I could do stuff like that and where you strength coaches don't have that benefit because y'all have a real job to do. Y'all have like a ton of kids that you have to take care of in these super long hours and oh my gosh, I don't know how y'all do it. But so I kind of thankfully get the best of both worlds.
No, shoot. I know your job's more busy than that. I've been trying to get a hold of you for several weeks, and I know your job. I know how busy you are. You mentioned, you know, Johnny Parker earlier, and I know he's speaking at Summer Strong this year. And, you know, the really cool thing that you got going on right now, and, you know, for those that, you know, Sorenex puts on Summer Strong each and every June, right? June.
Yeah, right at the end of June.
And so it's just going in the third year, fourth year?
Seventh
year. This is seven. There you go.
Yeah.
You know, when you go around, you know, as strength coaches, we love to go see other people's facilities. We get to go, we love to go see people train, and we love to see competition. And you've kind of combined all three of those things,
right?
Into Summer Strong. So talk a little bit about Summer Strong. What was the motivation behind it, and where are you trying to take it?
Well, the funny part is any good idea usually comes from a grassroots level. It was completely non-contrived. Dad's birthday is June 26th. I said, hey, what do you want to do for your birthday party? He goes, invite some of the strongmen and some of the lifters down, and maybe let's cook a hog or something and hang out and talk training. And so it was literally as simple as that. And we thought that maybe 20 people would show up. And the first day, like 50 or 60 showed up. And you're like, hey, this is kind of cool. Was not planning on doing it every year. It was just a one-day event. We literally did it, planned it like 48 hours before. Bunch of people flew in from out of town. Josh Hinken, actually sandbag guy, he was our first speaker ever. We didn't even know what speakers were. We were just like, we're going to start training sandbags. Who knows about it? Okay, you do good. You go. But the cool part, what we found was by doing it very loosely, you had an open form of communication where if one guy was talking about it, everyone felt comfortable to raise their hand and say, hey, do you mind if I show you what I've been doing with that? And it became basically about a 10-hour roundtable with topic changes about every hour. Mm. And then, of course, you know, we had a lot of food and drinks and everything, and it was great. And guys, you know, networked. And everyone told me this. And that was the most fun conference we've ever had. So it was a birthday party. So the next year, it kind of has grown. And then last year, we had a little over 500 people, and people come in from all over. So now it's become really a major focus of mine for the year. Because it's the opportunity that I get to thank my customers. I get to give them, as I said, I think I get to be a common denominator. If I could pull in people from all over the training world, not just collegiate strength coaches or high school or college, but Navy SEALs, Olympic gold medalists in the shot put, officials from the SEC, just guys from all over different disciplines, we could all learn from each other. We've had professional fighters come in, and I want to have where everyone gets respect. No one is the star, and everyone gets the teachers get to teach and learn.
Yeah.
And that was the key. Like, how do we create a situation where everyone, I don't care how smart you are, how, you know, high up the chain you are, you can walk away with something and you don't feel like you're just always bringing to the table that you could take back. And we've had people that have met at Summer Strong that become best friends, and guys, we've had guys hire other guys they met at Summer Strong.
Yeah.
And basically the problem that I have now, I mean, like, this year we have 17 presenters from all over the myriad of the strength world. The problem I'm having now is, how do you make it big enough to impact and help enough people, but still keep a homespun, grassroots, organic feel? Because although I love the Arnold sports festival, I don't want it to turn into that.
Right.
I parts of it, but that's not Summer Strong. And,
right.
And NSCA is a great convention, but it's not Summer Strong. CSCA, same thing. It's our kind of brand of what we choose is how we want to kind of run it. So, but you're right. We have competitions in there. This year we're doing the Ultimate Athlete Combine, which is closer to what we've done. We've done some Olympic lifting, we've done powerlifting, we've done some CrossFit, but really we train athletes.
Right.
And so, okay, let's do a decathlon of see who the best athlete is, period. And so that's going to be really interesting.
That's
this
cool.
Year. But really it's just an opportunity to give back. That's what it is just give back to the community that's given us so much, and hopefully in the meantime we could learn.
Yeah.
But we want you as a speaker next year, Ron.
I'm there, man. I I'm telling you, every year I'm like, man, the freaking football camp, you know. But
yeah.
But absolutely, I'm there, man. We're gonna make it happen.
Good.
What, you know, with that kind of comes a lot of, like you said, now you almost spend your whole year kind of working on it, you know, there's a lot of coaches that watch this that want to put on a clinic. What two pieces of advice that you would give a strength coach that wants to put on a not a Summer Strong, obviously, but a clinic?
Start early, start way early, and I would say aim really high. Aim as high, and again, not saying that there's better coaches than others or whatever, but just if you want the big names, ask them, call around. I made a list 6 months ago of people that I would want just to see at Summer Strong, whether whether they spoke or not, that just more of a guilty pleasure of mine that I'd like to see show up. And I contacted all of them, and probably 30% of them are showing up, and it's just out of nowhere. So, you know, make it folks that you know you would want to see.
Right.
And obviously make it, I say make it a little bit social, because that's where you and I, and the recent Michigan clinic, that was a great clinic those guys put on. And we got really, and I was just down at the Texas clinic. Awesome clinic. Bringing the right people in is key, because it's going to build the feeling of the clinic, regardless really who the speakers are. Who you have show up is who makes the party. And who really keeps that line of communication going. And so I love how some folks have been doing it recently. It's really, really good.
No, it's awesome, man. Well, I know you got to get going. You got a Father's Day weekend planned.
Oh, man.
I want you to get to that. But we always end these things with a couple resources. So give me a quote that either you live by, that's plastered up in the weight room, or something that you just have around.
It's not exactly a quote. It's a portion of a quote, but it's a little bit of a story, and I'm sure you've heard it. It's the one you feed.
Yeah.
It goes back to the two wolves. I'm sure you've heard it's the old Indian tells the grandson, there's two wolves that live inside you. One is full of hate and injustice and insecurity and an ego. And the other is filled with love and compassion and all the good things, and kindness and empathy. And the boy says, well, you know, which wolf wins if those two wolves are fighting inside? And he says, whichever one you feed. And for me, that's big, because I realize I'm a human, but it even goes back to the biblical principle of you reap what you sow. If I'm not sowing good seeds in my life and really searching for excellence, I could easily slip and I could easily fall and I could kind of turn into a cynical kind of jerk.
Right.
But if I'm feeding myself with good knowledge and good people around me and striving for excellence, then things generally work out. It's not a surprise how things work out.
Right.
And I think it's so easy to do that. It's easy to get pulled down by your circumstances or by the folks around you. So you got to keep eating the right stuff and feed that right wolf, you know.
That's awesome. That's a great one. Give me a book that you've read, or one that you recommend every strength coach should read.
The book I'm just got done reading, and I'm sure a lot of you have read it, and it doesn't have anything to do with strength coaching, but it's changed my mindset and my life in some ways, is Service by Marcus Luttrell.
Yeah.
And if you read it, if you're a business person, if you're a strength coach, I don't care who you are, it's an amazing book into the mindset of an elite warrior, but even an athlete as well. And it's helped me from a selflessness standpoint. The things I learned from it were, take each set, each rep, each step, one at a time. If you look too far down the road and you go, wow, this set of 10 in the back squat is going to really suck and I don't know if I could get through it, you're probably going to fail.
Right.
If you were able to say, I'm going to do this one rep as best I possibly can, and when I stand up, I'm going to go down and do one rep as best as I possibly can, then I'm going to do the next rep as best as I possibly can. So taking each step, and that's how all those guys got through BUDS.
Yep.
And they said is interesting. They said any person who ever said I quit during BUDS, even if they were given another chance to come back, none of those people have ever passed BUDS training. Because once that inception of quit is in your mind, it's impossible. It's poison. You can't get it out. So setting up your life to where those bite-sized chunks that you don't ever have that quit mentality, and just not complaining about your circumstances, because when you complain, everything becomes self-centered. You're not looking out for the guy beside you.
You're feeding the bad wolf.
That's that. You're feeding the bad wolf. That's exactly it. And that wolf is hungry, man. He'll eat it up. That's what I'm really hot on, that book and just that mindset, because I'm so amazed that those men, what they do for our country and the reasons.
No doubt.
That's my book suggestion.
The Marcus Luttrell is one that wrote Lone Survivor as well,
absolutely.
And the movie that just came out. And so it's a fantastic book. Both books are fantastic.
Yep.
Give us a website that you typically go to for information, or and then an app that maybe you've used.
Website, I've gotten a lot more information from Juggernaut recently. Chad Smith. He's one of our speakers this year, and I've gotten to know him a lot more over the last year or two. Man, talk about a guy who's on his game. And he's really, again, kind of bringing that hybrid approach to training and recovery, and he's really on the cutting edge. He's a lifter. He's an athlete. You know, he was a very good shot putter. So he's had to become a student of the event, and I like how he's kind of bringing powerlifting back more to the raw and the things that you're really, you know. I'm sorry if you need geared guys out there, but it's interesting to see that it's coming back around to something that's a little closer to what our performance training is in strength conditioning as an app.
Yeah.
I really liked what he's doing. As far as an app, I'm not that technically advanced when it comes to like strength apps, so I have to just say my Google Calendar.
Okay. Hey, man. Gotta keep you organized.
I live by it, man. And that's so awesome. That's kind of where I'm at.
That's awesome, man. Well, brother, it's been a fun conversation, man. It really has. I truly respect and appreciate what you guys are doing for the strength game and how much you're not only are you servicing with great products, but you're giving back with great community and great events and things like that. So I appreciate that, man. Last question, I'll let you go.
Sure.
Give us the story behind the handlebars.
nice. Okay. Well, if you Dad's had a mustache since forever. Actually, he looked a lot more like Magnum PI in the 80s, but in the 90s, he decided to grow a big handlebar mustache. And why is that? He's always had an affection for the old time strongman. You know, you look at you're only going to grow a handlebar mustache if you have testosterone, which is good. You're a man. And two, if you put a lot of time in, and it's time with the purpose, which is exactly a parallel to strength training.
Yeah.
Because if you just normally grow a mustache, it looks really terrible for about 3 or 4 months, which is very similar to strength training. It's going to really suck and be really hard for a while until you get something out of it. But if you have a plan, much as growing a big, sweet handlebar, you have to have a plan to do it, and you have to go through the really uncomfortable time when you look stupid, and then you come out with something that's different and above what the average person is, which is like being strong. So now I understand, after doing it myself a few times, I understand why the old time strongmen, why that was so important to them. And so kind of as an homage to the old time strongmen in being made in America, we're about pushing and making sure that our guys are taken care of, and a little bit of homage to Pop. And so it's just kind of our mindset. Like, we're going to be proud about what we're doing, and we're going to push, and we're going to try to set ourselves aside.
That's a strong brand, man. I love the values. It's a company built on values, so I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you, brother. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, Ron, you do an awesome job, dude. Keep it up. I hope to watch this for years and years to come.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thanks a ton.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out RonMcKeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @RMcKeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @Ron.McKeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.